Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, and Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
Ladies and gentlemen, I'm Alfred Addisk, and this is Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver, 1-800-375-4188. My co-host today is Roger Sales, Roger S. Sales, our foreign correspondent from Argentina. Roger will be with us in a moment. First, we'll do the market reports. Gold's down $5 an ounce to $1,426.80. Silver's off 26 cents to $23.49 per ounce. Platinum is up 22 to $15.09. Palladium is up 12 to $7.34. Dow Jones is up 115 to 15,207. NASDAQ is up 23 to 3,462. New York Stock Exchange is up 73 to 9,510. New York's U.S. Dollar Index is up 0.34 to 83.57. And crude oil is off 90 cents to $94.27 per barrel. I'm surprised that the U.S. dollar is up to 83.57. It surprises me that it's breaking. You know, anything is possible. It could go up to 86. It could fall down to 73. Hard to say. You can't interpret much from one day's change. Still, in broad strokes, I'm kind of surprised that the U.S. dollar is hanging around 83 and above right now. What is the basis for that strength? It indicates the dollar is becoming more valuable, and I don't know that it is becoming more valuable. I think it continues to decline, but when you say more valuable, we're talking about more valuable relative to what? The dollar is clearly becoming more valuable relative to the Japanese yen, which is losing value intentionally. The Japanese government is inflating the yen, intentionally bringing it down. And when it goes down, we have a teeter-totter effect. When the yen goes down relative to the dollar must go up. When the dollar goes down, the yen must go up. It may be that what we're seeing is a stronger dollar in a response to a weaker yen, perhaps a weaker euro. I'm not sure if that's true or false. But I'm wondering, in reality, not in relationship to other fiat currencies, because that's what the U.S. dollar index measures, the value of the dollar, the fiat dollar, in relationship to other fiat currencies, which are also losing value. So what is happening to the real value of the U.S. dollar? It's unclear to me that it's not something I'm able to understand, that the real U.S. dollar is growing more valuable. I don't understand reason for that. Roger, are you there?
I'm right here, man. I'm ready to foreign correspond with you.
All right. I'm not sure, is that legal anymore or not?
I don't know. They might have changed it into illegal since I was up there. Irregular, you know how these agencies are. The correspondence I'll give you first is that in Argentina, it's a little cloudy, a bit cool. We're going into our later fall period of the year. And as far as I can tell today and in the recent days since last week, everybody's pretty happy and they're smiling on their face and everybody's real friendly. So, you know, it's pretty good. I think I've got a little chime in here on what you're talking about, though, because I think we can refine that down a little bit, and let's look at it in a little broader terms, conceptually, if you will. You know, these guys are magicians, right? Isn't that what people call them? It's like magic. They're doing all this stuff, boom, boom, boom. Well, what they've done here, I believe, is you mentioned it. You got the euro sinking because they're inflating the currency, and they got the yen even more so. So you got the dollar sticking up even though it's going down at the same time. It's the inverse of the old saying, a rising tide lifts all boats.
Mm-hmm.
Well, this is like they're all going down, all the boats are going down, but they've got where this one boat has got a little bit less buoyancy, and it's sitting up above the other ones. And now that, if you take that in relation to what's going on in opposition, the other side around the rest of the world, China and the other countries, Russia, India, are all buying gold. They evidently are leveraging the LBMA, London Bullion Metal Exchange, and even out of New York. And they're literally, with these forces, sucking the gold over to their part of the world.
Sure.
And then you've got, as opposed to gold, the currency, you've got basically all these other countries on one side that are ganging up together and using their own mechanisms and excluding the dollar out of mm-hmm. their trade mechanisms. And so it really is isolating it. And now you see when all
and
that's starting
to happen,
what do you see?
Boom. How can it be gaining value? Well, it's being isolated.
Syria, war.
How can the dollar, the real dollar be gaining value as it is increasingly isolated? And in theory, there's less demand for it. Globally, less people want it, and yet the dollar on the dollar index appears to be growing
right.
stronger. It's irrational, in my opinion.
The only way well, it is, but you see, that's what I wanted to talk about a little bit today, because exactly what you're saying is how can all these things be happening and it still be going what it appears to be up? It's because all the others are sinking. And
yeah,
that's one of the things I saw a video recently, and the guy has crossed my path before, and he's in my book. And I heard him on the Power Hour years ago. His name is Dr. Bruce Lipton, and he is one of the sharper knives in the drawer, okay? And what the part I wrote about in my book, and we've talked about it on this show before, is that what my information does, the way I've come to understand it, is it clarifies your thinking and allows your conscious and your subconscious to start working together. And it's just exactly, instead of being set apart, dialectic, if you will, with the opposite meanings of a word and the slight delay in time between your conscious mind, which doesn't control, and your subconscious mind, which controls about 90% of our day. And I have thought for a long time that that's how they're pulling off the illusion. But this kind of refines that a little bit, and it's quite interesting because I think it's a tool. Al, you were a roofer, right?
I had a roofing business at one point in my life. I used to do roof maintenance for what it's worth.
All right. Well, if you were going to go up and do a roof and you only had a jackhammer, you probably couldn't do a very good job, could you?
Not. You could make leaks, but you can't fix them.
All right. And so the point being is that you need the right tools to do a job.
Yeah.
And this is what I think Bruce Lipton covered in this video that I saw, because he made a real fine point distinction for me that has really clarified my thinking in just the last 4 or 5 days on this point. And the reason I wanted to mention it is because it's a tool to give to your hands where you can rebuild the roof. And what I'm going to try and do is put it in the audience's and your hands so we can help affect some change in a positive way. And that is this simple concept. Beliefs are formed by perceptions. Now, if you look out and you got your five senses, touch, sound, ears, eyes, taste, and you look out and you get a perspective, and that comes into a perception, and the perception you bring in your brain from that is what forms your belief. And what we find, I think we do, is we go in when we're trying to talk to people and we attack beliefs instead of going the right way and trying to change their perceptions to get down to change the beliefs. Now, you were saying the dollar has this exceedingly high point and you can't understand it. That's because they're messing with your perceptions by doing this illusionary move, and they're influencing people's belief that way and making them make wrong decisions. So
why do people? I agree with you pretty much, but from my perspective, belief and perception are two very different things, and I don't necessarily agree that belief flows from perception. I mean, I understand that it does, but it doesn't seem to me as pure as you might see, as what you said suggests. Belief. Well, we believe things. For example, I might believe in Santa Claus because my mommy told me. Okay? Belief is always based on what someone else, it's what someone tells us. Belief isn't really perception. It's a perception of what people tell us. It's not a simple perception of go out and look out the window and look at the trees and the cars and the birds.
It wasn't just what your mother told you. It was you woke up the next morning and there was a half-drunk glass of milk and some cookies that were gone that were there the night before. That all
yeah, that was me. That was me. I got up and ate the cookies and drank the milk. I knew that was.
You understand what I'm saying? I'm not talking about specifics here. I try and approach this stuff in concepts anymore because I've found that it really allows me to understand things easier. I've mentioned this quote on the show before, Al, to you, and it's come to be very meaningful for me. Because I like quotes, and it was in my book. I saw it somewhere along the line, and because all of a sudden I realized how powerful it was, and it's this. It was an Eleanor Roosevelt quote, and it said, "Small minds talk about people. Medium minds talk about events. Large minds talk about concepts." And I thought it was a cool quote, but then as it hit me, the magnitude of it, this is about a year and a half or so ago, I consciously started forcing myself to try and think conceptually. And man, it's really opened some doors for me, okay? And here's another good quote that Glenn sent me just the other day. It says, "It does not require a majority to prevail, but rather an irate, tireless minority keen to set bushfires in other people's minds."
Mm-hmm.
And the New World Order is our best friend right now because the tide has turned on them, in my sense, because of the internet. And
I agree.
There's so many people that are awakening now, and they're seeing how drastic things are, that the natural perception of things is altering their beliefs. And then they're approachable, and you can go up before they go, nah, you're a nut. Now all of a sudden, hey, that guy might not be a nut anymore. Why? Because their perceptions of how bad things are have put their beliefs heretofore pretty steady on a shaky foundation. All right? So I think this is a big thing, and I just lay it out there for people to, try and understand and toy with. The guy's name is Dr. Bruce Lipton. I'm sure there's some searchable stuff on the web about it. And I know that I can't eloquently, like he did in an hour or more, get this idea across to you, because he had slides and demonstrations and bringing a lot of things into it. I'm simplifying it and giving it to you, basically, Al.
Well, here's the way I look at, first, the relationship of belief to perception. Belief is always hearsay. I mean, that's the way it's defined in law. I believe something. Why do you believe it? Well, because somebody told me. You believe because someone told you. That's what belief is about. Perception is about not what someone told you, but what you saw and observed effectively with your own eyes, and there's a difference. Knowledge is, I saw this. I can testify to knowledge. I can't testify to belief easily in a court. They're looking, what did you see? What are the facts? What did you see? Well, what do you believe? An entirely different thing from what you see. And what I want to get to, the thing that's bothered me a little bit about the conflict between belief and perception is people wind up with the contradictions in their minds. We are taught to believe certain things. For example, Santa Claus is one example, but there's a lot of other things. We're taught to believe in something like Santa Claus, and yet, eventually, our perception gets to a point where our perception says, no, there is no Santa Claus. We believe there is, we perceive there's not. Which observation do you use to base your life? Do you base your life on your beliefs that you've been taught by other people, your schools, your community, your churches, your government? Is that where you establish your principles based on beliefs, or do you establish them based on your own perception? And the difference is that the most important difference to my mind is it takes enormous courage to trust in your own perceptions and say, yeah, everybody's telling me Santa Claus, but guess what? I don't see one. I don't think there's one there. Now, am I going to believe what everyone else says, or am I going to trust in my own eyes and ears? And it's not a small choice. And most people choose to believe what they're told rather than to accept what they see. All right? Question of courage, not just perception, but courage. Will you trust your own eyes and ears? And most people won't. And that's what makes them susceptible to exploitation and manipulation by people in positions of power, people who control the media. They are able to manipulate because the herd will follow their beliefs rather than their perceptions. You follow what I'm saying?
I follow exactly what you're saying, and yeah. I'm going to tie it back to a little exchange we had the other day, because I said something to you in a small exchange we had, and you didn't get, I don't think, what I was talking about. And that is, what makes you and I click the way we do on the air is because we've both accomplished the same goal, and there's not too many people that have done it. There are others, okay. But what we did is we fought through the enemy and found, if you will, a halo of God's protection and his light. And we fought through against all that blackness, and you and I both reached that halo. We just reached it from different opposite directions, okay? And by that I mean you went through the court route. You may have volunteered for it. I don't know.
I kind of did, but I didn't know what I was getting into. I didn't expect to be a defendant. surprise.
It's like I volunteered for the military. You don't know
exactly.
You're going over there and check bikinis, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
So anyway, you fight your way through the court system there, drugged through it by the nose. I came up from the back way and nailed them through the administrative system. Mm-hmm. And we both arrived at the same point. And the reason we both were able to make it through all of that adverse territory is because we stood on the absolute grounds of truth.
Yeah. And it was
We didn't let anything change our focus. I knew I was putting one step in front of the other. I didn't know where I was going. I just knew I needed. I was being drugged there. Okay, yeah.
And drugged by what?
I knew that.
Drugged by what?
Just like you said. I volunteered. I volunteered too.
By the truth. All right. Not by what you believe, but what you perceive in your own mind, and you see something that no one else has seemingly seen before, and therefore the average person that turned their back on, well, I must be crazy to think that. And turns out you are exactly what that point was for me.
I'm sorry for stepping on you. I can tell you exactly what that point was for me. And that was when I got into John and Glenn's learning, and in the tax stuff we studied, because that's their specialty, saw that listing as a non-resident alien in Title 26 1.1-1A. And I knew that wasn't right, and I knew what it was from their teachings, but I didn't know where standing on that truth and following it would lead me.
No.
And where it's led me to is here today talking about these wonderful things.
How did you follow that trail? We only have 20 seconds here, but I'm going to bet you followed that trail. You are compelled and drawn by the truth, and ultimately you trusted in your own perception rather than the beliefs that were inspired by others.
You nailed it right on the head, man. And let's carry this in on the other side, because I think it's real important.
I agree. I'm Alfred Addis here with Roger S. Sales, our foreign correspondent from Argentina. We'll be back on Financial Survival in about 3 minutes. Please stay tuned.
Pandemics will be a part of our future. The question is, how do we protect ourselves? Are you willing to put your trust in an untested vaccine, hoping it kills mutating viruses? Remember, in 1976, health officials tried to inoculate Americans with swine flu, and there was a 300% death rate in those inoculated, and millions were paid out in damages. God gave you a sophisticated immune system, and in times of need, you can make it 10 times stronger. So there's no need to panic. Just get prepared. Call Apothecary Herbs to order your upgraded pandemic kit. You will have 8 professional strength formulas offering broad-spectrum immune-boosting protection. Take a stand, have a plan, have peace, and request your pandemic kit today. Or take your chances with the bad boys. Call Apothecary Herbs toll-free, 866-229-3663, or online, thepowerherbs.com.
Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, and Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
American Voice Radio Network is heard on Galaxy 19 at 97 degrees west, transponder 23, frequency 12115, audio PID 2595. AVR is heard on the left side audio channel, and AVR 2 is heard on the right side audio channel. Remember, both AVR and AVR 2 are on Galaxy 19. Same network, double the choices.
Folks, I'm Alfred Adusk here with Roger S. Sales on Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver, 1-800-375-4188 for all your gold and silver coin needs. We are talking about the difference between perception and belief. And one of the things that crosses my mind in this discussion, there's a verse in the Bible, and I can't tell you the verse. But I know that it's there where the good Lord is, the Christ is speaking about those who have eyes to see and ears to hear. And what he's saying there, at least by implication, is that some of us do have eyes to see and ears to hear, and some of us do not. And those who do not have eyes that can truly see in an objective sense, and ears that can truly hear in an objective sense, those who don't have that, they are compelled into a kind of mindless belief. They believe what other people tell them, but they don't exactly perceive the world on their own. They are tangled up with their society in a way that makes them good little Germans, good little followers. All right, not bad people, but potentially bad if the society turns bad. If the people telling them what to do become bad, then the people who do not have eyes to see and ears to hear, they will commit sometimes terrible acts based on mere belief. Well, others who have eyes to see and ears to hear, they're going to sit back and look and say, no, that's wrong. Or they'll look at something else. When everybody else says, they'll say, the society says, this is right. And the people with eyes to see, people with ears to hear say, no, that's wrong. I see it. I don't need someone to tell me. I see it. I know. And there's a difference between knowledge and belief. We get knowledge from that perception in part. We get belief, hearsay from other people. So what do you think, Roger? Where do you weigh in on it?
I'll tell you, I've had some really interesting experiences here lately, Al, and one of them is the way that I look at things. Remember the story I've told on here before about that little story I read in Reader's Digest, man, when I was a kid sitting in the bathroom one time, because we always had them in the bathroom, and you'd read that little section, Life in These United States, you know, funny
stuff. Couldn't afford toilet paper?
Yeah, it was on a real Reader's Digest paper.
Okay.
And so anyway, it was a very interesting story, and I think it illustrates my point here very well. I've remembered it all these years. It was a little town, and you're driving through these little towns that have a railroad track on top and an arch bridge underneath it, and the road goes through the arch, right?
Yep.
And in this little town, it's the main street in town, and an 18-wheeler didn't judge the height differential right, and he got his 18-wheeler stuck a little bit of it under the trailer up under the bridge. And it was blocking the highway, and here's all of the mayor, the city engineer, all these civil engineers. They're all standing around trying, what do we do? We're going to have to tear the bridge down, the railroad track, cut the railroad line off. And some little 7-year-old kid walks up and says, why don't you let some air out of the tires? Okay, boom, problem solved. So yep. All the big honchos couldn't see it, but somebody comes up and looks at something a totally different direction, boom, and there's the problem solved. Okay, and I've gotten some of those epiphanies lately, all right? And that's what I call them, a little epiphany. I like that word. And one of them is I'm working real closely down here now with a guy that's a shaman healer. And he's a very, very spiritual guy. You know, shaman is like the native Indian and all of those types of energies and good energies and stuff. And that one word that he gave me clarified a great deal of my thinking. And that is I have a problem with the dialectic, in my mind, with money, because I know so much about it and understand it that I hate what it does to people. So my distaste from it is from that, my perception of what it does to people, because they're always after it for materialistic evil methods, all right?
Okay,
so
wait just
I
a second.
That,
now, we're right? talking about money.
Yes, what we conceive as money, let's say currency to finite it more, but debt money, okay? Not good money, gold and silver, which has a good connotation, but this fiat debt money that entraps people in this materialistic mindset and quest. You know,
the Bible actually says, doesn't say that that money is the root of all evil. It says love of money is the root of all evil. They recognize that money is a necessity that you got to have. It's like water and food and the rest of that sort of thing. Yeah, money's a good thing. But the love of money becomes the root of all evil.
And that's what I want to illustrate here. And if you go off in this materialistic mind, you know, they call it the rat race. You know, that's what they called it decades ago, right? Well, we had a saying in the MLM days that said, even if you win the rat race, you're still a rat.
Yeah, I understand. But you're the king rat. That's the important
thing. Whatever. Okay. So let's take this concept of money that we're having a little fine-tuning on, if you will, and let's move it over into another description, another word. Let's call it energy. So now you can separate it, and you can either use it for something good, maybe spiritual, if you want to think along those lines, or you can use it for something bad, which is to draw people over here into materialism and trap them into, like the children of Israel were when Moses came down from Mount Sinai with the tablets. They were worshiping the golden calf, man. Yeah. That's what they've got us doing. We're worshiping the golden calf of materialism.
Well,
using
I agree.
Their debt that enslaves you before you ever even start.
The only difference is they've woke up. They're not even using a golden calf. They're using a paper calf at best, which is kind of like a pinata. All right, we're worshiping the paper calf, and you hit it with a stick, and maybe there's some candy, maybe there's not, and it's even gone to a digital calf.
Well, you
we're registering it's
guys,
just zeros and ones on a hard drive someplace.
This is like the little kid, see? The little kid with the tires. What these guys have done, what was the quest for, you know, the hundreds of thousands of years was to change lead into gold.
Yep.
Well, they just reversed it. They changed gold into paper.
Well, or they changed paper into gold. In theory, they've tried to run that, and it worked for them for a while.
Sure, except now they're running out of gold.
The alchemists, it cost money to lay hands on lead. The paper and the digital, that's almost free.
You remember Buffett's famous little quip here from a couple of years ago? When the tide goes out, it catches those people who've been swimming naked. And well, that's what's happening right now. They're swimming naked with that gold and silver they've been giving you the illusion that they had to run this scam. And yeah. It's getting pressed, and they ain't got it. And their little fanny is in a crack, buddy.
Well, let me, here, speaking on the gold a little bit, we talked about it at the beginning of the program to some degree. There is one of the things that kind of disturbed me is that I just started thinking about this a week or so ago, a week or 10 days, something like that. How much gold does the government, does the United States import, and how much does it export every year? And it seems like that number should be easily found and easily discovered. And the truth is, it just crossed my mind and I began to think to myself, you know, I don't know what the difference is. How much do we import? How much do we export? Is it a positive flow, a negative flow, an even flow? What do we got going here? And why haven't I seen that number before? Well, this turns out a guy by the name of Chris Martinson, who was a co-founder of an entity called Peak Prosperity. I'm not familiar with it. But he did an article on how much gold we have, and he did some study, and he came up with numbers. And what he concluded, let me go through the numbers a little bit here. We produce about 6,400 tons of gold in this country. We recycle about 1,100 tons. That means the U.S. gold supply is about 7,500 tons per year. The total demand is 6,500 tons, which leaves about 1,000 tons available for all uses, 6,500 tons. That's for making coins, for jewelry, for dentistry, for electronics. We use about 6,500 tons of gold in this country. That leaves, we start with 7,500 tons, we use 6,500 tons. It leaves us about 1,000 tons to export. He says the actual exports are about 11,000 tons, but at the same time, the actual imports are close to 6,000 tons. And so the net exports are 5,500 tons. Now, what he's coming up with, he's already calculated after we take the 6,500 tons we use from the 7,500 tons that we produce and recycle. We've only got 11,000. We've only got 1,000 tons to export, and yet we are exporting about 5,500 tons. So his question is, where are the extra 4,490 tons coming from that we are exporting each year? And it can't be explained from the numbers he's been able to accumulate. We're giving away again 4,500 tons of gold every year. We're moving it out of this country. Where's it coming
from?
That's
what. Well, that's what they've got in storage, either that was the U.S.'s or were these other countries that hadn't been lucky enough to get it back, like Venezuela and Germany's trying to do. And that is what, if you read any of these financial guys, you know, the Jim Sinclairs and the Turks and those guys, they keep referring to the suction of the action that's moving gold from west to east, and that's exactly what's happening. They're evidently, the LBMA is moving most of their stuff over to Hong Kong and that new China depository over there. So it's natural forces that are at work here, and the markets have created this imbalance, and they understand what's happening, and they're going over and sucking the essence out and bringing it over there to that part of the world. You're seeing the balance of power shift right now, is what you're seeing.
Oh, absolutely.
And
absolutely.
The future move to the yuan, renminbi, whatever the heck you want to call it, as a world reserve currency of sorts, replacing the dollar. How long that polar shift, if you will, is going to take, I have no idea, but it's certainly clearly underway.
Well, if we're talking about 4,500 tons of gold that are disappearing in a single year from an unexplained source, that's half of what the Federal Reserve claims to have. Federal Reserve claims to have, my understanding, I believe it's 8,200 tons of gold. And they've claimed to have that amount steadily since the 1950s. Federal Reserve hasn't been audited since 1953. They tell us, oh, we got this gold, trust us, right? But nobody's actually seen it and counted it in over 50 years.
Well, once again, when you say audit, did they get the books audited? Did they go down and look and see if it was gold?
Go down and physically count the bars of gold. Pick them up in your hand and count them, and not even allowing for tungsten. How many bars of gold do you have?
See, then you're going to have to assay every one of them.
Well, now, I understand.
And you don't assay in the old way that the evidently has radically changed with all this deception, is the old way they assayed them was they'd take a small drill out of each corner and test that. But now the Chinese drilled in the center and got tungsten. So now I think the method may have changed.
Yeah, you get a cream filling with every one of your. You got a Federal Reserve.
That's a
Federal Reserve Twinkie,
man. We may have coined something here today, man.
Federal Reserve Twinkies with a tungsten filling.
Listen, while we're talking about gold, I think this is real significant for the audience and for you too, because I bet I know you're a busy guy up there, and I know that you probably hadn't had a chance to look at that article I sent you from Sinclair. Today, it's out and around, let's say that. But you can go to any search engine, you can start page this, Free Gold, FREEGOLD, and it's
one word.
An article.
One word.
No, two words. Have you ever heard this concept before?
No.
Okay, well, you read that article, man. It's going to really set you back on its ears. Somebody started leaking this stuff anonymously in a blog back in 2000 or early 2000 under anonymous names and then more anonymous names, and it's theorized that it was somebody high up with the Bank of International Settlements or one of the Rothschilds possibly. And what they've done is they've gone in and given you the key to the way the world has always run, and that's called free gold. And I've just skimmed over it. I don't have it all down, but it's extremely interesting to me. And Sinclair is talking about it in some depth. And what he's talking about is it's the old concept where currency circulates, but everybody saves their money in gold. And you're taking away the legal tender aspect where you're forced to use the currency to pay debts. And it frees the whole system, and it stops any manipulation. It's an extremely interesting concept, and those of you who are interested in the money thing and where we are in all of this metamorphosis, if you will, should look into it because it's extremely interesting, and I had never heard of it before today.
Well, I haven't either. The whole idea, I mean, it's got to be – you sent the article over, and I began to glance at it, but I only received it. I only saw it 15, 20 minutes before the show, and I thought, I will not grasp the concept of free gold in the 15 minutes before the show begins. The whole idea, I'm not sure what the idea is, but it sounds.
In general, it allows the two to both circulate concurrently without the negative.
Oh, I get what you're saying. You're saying that we have two mediums operating at the same time. Both gold
Correct.
And perhaps a paper currency.
Correct.
Okay.
And there's no negative effects. And the negative effects are put to the side with the way they got it structured. That's what I'm saying. I haven't had a chance to really read through it and digest it either, but I got that much out of it so far, and it was darn stimulating to me for thought purposes.
Do you understand what we're going to get the adverse effects, if at all, out of having both gold and a paper currency running? And
well,
the answer will be if they fix the price. If they set gold, it's always worth $20 an ounce, $35 an ounce, $100 an ounce. When they fix the price, inevitably the price changes. And smart people will perceive that change, and they will take advantage of it, and they will either dump their gold to get the currency, depending on the price, the true price ratio, or they'll dump their currency to get the gold. And that's part of the reason why bimetallism, the idea that we could use both a silver and a gold currency, was fraught with danger. When you fix and you say silver is absolute, 50 ounces of silver to 1 ounce of gold, that's the fixed rate. I guarantee that won't stand, and when it fails, strange things will happen. Another strange thing's going to happen. We're going to break for some more commercial announcements. We'll be back in about 3 minutes. I'm Alfred Addis here with Roger S. Sales on Financial Survival. Please stay tuned. We'll be right back.
countries have denied internet access for their people during civil strife. The FCC seized in-use commercial shortwave frequencies right after the September 11th attacks. No one communication system can be depended on to be there when you need information. You need choices. You need a KU band free-to-air satellite system from AVR. The AVR system includes a receiver, an LNB, and a 75-centimeter dish. All you need to get on your own is the coaxial cable. The system is delivered to your door for $149.99. That's right, delivered for $149.99. That's the shipping and the system, $149.99. Call 541-225-4659. That's 541-225-4659. Or visit AmericanVoiceRadio.com and click Satellite System.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it. Nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cedarstrom, on American Voice Radio Network and Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Hi, folks. I'm Alfred Addis here on Financial Survival with Roger S. Sales, calling in from Argentina as our foreign correspondent. We're talking about money, talking about gold, perception, belief. I don't think it's the sort of program that you can pick up on a lot of stations. I know you're not going to get it on the mainstream media. I know it's not for everyone, per se. We try to advance some ideas and insights that are hopefully a little bit intelligent, require more than a 30-second soundbite to communicate, and hopefully that appeals to enough people to hold an audience together. So where are we going with our gold, Roger?
Well, go ahead. I wanted to bring up a point there on what you opened up with, because I think this is interesting and relevant. Back in the old days when you used to fight the paradigm, left-right paradigm, you know, you'd write letters and to your congressman, all that stuff. I remember one of them saying one time, said, I look at those letters, but when one comes in that's handwritten, I really pay attention to it, because then I figure anybody that's taken the time and effort to do that, there's at least 30 other people that feel that way. Okay, and I've always remembered that. I thought it was interesting, and the reason that I bring that up is because we got a correspondence this week, and I'm sure that this old gal's listening today. Her name's Kathy, and she left a message on your blog about last week's show when we started to get into these kind of things, because what's happened to me, Al, is I've shifted my thinking, and I've gone into more of what I've even coined a phrase. I call it remnant thinking, because I'm not trying to dwell on the problems now, because you can't solve them. They're too big, and they're headed towards their inevitable ends. You can get out of the way of them, certainly, protect yourself. But my shifting's kind of, I think it's kind of shifted to the future a little bit. And so, Kathy, you sent me that message, and I corresponded with Kathy, and we exchanged a couple of emails. And the interesting thing is that word energy, because now I've been able to understand that that's the reason that our message vibrates with these people that listen to these shows, is because they're on our same energy frequency. And that whole context, that concept of energy has opened vistas for me in a very short period of time. But what I wanted to say is in this email that Kathy sent me, and I sent her, I said, have you ever heard, you know, read my book? And she said, hell, I didn't even know you had a book. So what she said, the way I found you guys is I'm aware of what's happening with her very strong spiritual base. And so she was looking for some financial stuff, and she ran across Melody in the program, and she started listening to you. And for some strange reason, she thought that your logic and stuff was cogent, and she liked. And then she heard both of us on last week.
What do you mean, for some strange reason, Roger? I mean,
well, I had to throw that.
Too much fluoride? Is that where my audience is among people who get too much fluoride or what?
You know, a story's like a good meal, man. It isn't good without salt and pepper to add in there. That's just
all right.
Okay, so Kathy says in her email to me, this is the point I wanted to get to, is she said, I know we're in the end times.
Yeah.
And that struck me, and I've had internet problems. I didn't get a chance to get back with her on it, so I'm going to address it here today. From my understanding, it's not the end times, that is a mistranslation in the King James Version of the Bible, and that the real Greek translation is the end of an age. So if you take that thought and plug it in there, that you're not into some live or die thing, because there's always a remnant. There's going to be people left. These people have screwed up. We know there's a remnant. I can prove it to you. I can prove it to you. I can read Revelation 18 to you, and it gives the remedy in there. And it's not a remedy unless there's somebody left to be able to execute it. Okay? And I don't no pun intended. Huh? Okay? So my thinking has shifted to the future, and it's important that people understand that, it, like this kid with the wheels, it's how you look at stuff, okay? It's how you think, not what you think, all right? There's your perception thing.
But again, it's not just how you think. You have to trust what you think. That child was able to see because no one had told him he was too dumb to make a contribution. Right? He was able to trust in his own perceptions, where if that same child was 7 years old, by the time he got to be 12 or 15, he might not have enough courage to suggest what he could see with his own eyes.
No, here's the answer. If you get that old, you've been through engineering school, and then you can't see.
I understand.
It's like the doctor that can't see natural vitamins. It's like the dentist that can't see mercury in the fillings. I mean, we're talking about the same thing here.
Yeah,
it's boxed thinking. And what we're talking about today helps people adjust their thinking and understand it, so you've got the levers in your own hands to help shape your own future. You know, somebody told me one day, I was telling them, I said, you know, I'm pretty well financially set for what's coming. And the guy goes, you're lucky. And I thought, well, hell, I'm not lucky. You know, there used to be an old coach, one of those coach speak things that says the harder you work, the luckier you get.
Yeah.
I've studied my butt off to get in a position where I understand my enemy, I understand his history, I understand their tendencies, I understand the forces they use, and because I can bring all that together, I can stick myself in front of their damn wave with a wax surfboard, and people call you a visionary. It wasn't a visionary. I worked my butt off to get here.
Yeah, I understand. What else do you understand, Roger? You talk about understanding your adversary and understanding your material, one thing. Let me tell you one other thing you understand and you're probably not thinking of. It's not crossing your mind right this moment. You understand how to present your argument to people. And what that means, it's not just a matter of whether you understand your enemy. A lot of people can understand the enemy, but can they explain it in front of a jury?
Can you exploit his weaknesses?
Well, can you even explain it where you make people sit back and they realize and they start to identify? Say, yeah, I know what he's talking about. I get what he's talking about. You know, it's very important to begin to be able to speak. A lot of the ideas from people like myself and you and people in this community, a lot of them sound half-baked. Just because they are new, they are often original. And you have to get past that. It's not enough to just know. You have to also get to a point where you can explain. And when you can get to the point where you can explain what you're saying and you sound reasonable and rational, as I apparently do to Kathy at least once in a while.
She stumbled into you.
Well, you know, what can I tell you? When you get to the point where you can explain and you can make your presentation to a jury and the jury doesn't think you're a nut, at that point in time you become dangerous, because now you're hard to deal with. The government can catch a lot of people who believe some of these ideas but can't really explain them.
You know, Jim Prentice is one of my favorite readers, and somebody that's gotten to be a very good friend of mine. He's a retired cop down there in South Florida, and he's the guy that read my book 10 times in the first 2 weeks and said he got something different out of it every time. He's a thinker and a researcher, and he used to was a research team leader for Dan Metter, who I know you're familiar with, the late Dan Metter. And one of the things he told me here, I don't know, a couple of months back, he said, you know, Roger, we were pretty well on to everything that you've done, except we didn't put it in the form of an affidavit. There you go. Now, there's your lance of truth, because you structure that thing and draw it up correctly, and they can't deny it. The high, you know, it's king of the mountain, man. If I'm up here and you can't dispel me, I'm above you. Truth always stands. It's a very powerful weapon, and very few people understand it. And that's
there's one other point to it. You've got to be able to write an effective affidavit of truth, point one. But you also have to introduce it as evidence into the record of whatever conflict you're involved in. Now, you have to understand how to get it on the record. Not enough to just write it. You got to introduce it as evidence, and that's the second point. And if you can do that, then the only way they can get around that is someone's got to stand up and swear to the contrary. And they got to say, no, that's not true. He just lied on his affidavit, or he made mistakes, and here's the truth. Swear. And they can't get anybody to swear to refute your affidavit if it's introduced into evidence.
Because you just made my point from earlier in the show on how we come from different directions. Because when I said that, you automatically thought court. I used my affidavit. I didn't have to go to any court. I went to the head agency in the government that has to do with this subject matter. I got their approval, and you just go zip right down to every agency and say, boom, you don't have jurisdiction over me anymore, pal. Disprove this. The State Department's agreed with me. They're your boss. Boom, 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 boom. And you serve it to all them.
Right. But you've introduced it into evidence down at the administrative level.
At the administrative level, and that's my point, is that you can do this at the administrative level. You don't have to go into that court. I'd rather go have a whole mouthful of what do you call those things with your teeth?
Root canals?
I'd rather have a mouthful of root canals and go to court. All right?
Well, I'll tell you what we're going to have. We're not going to have root canals, but I've had Earl from Oregon has been hanging on the phone, or at least he was. I'm not sure if he's still here. Earl, I'm sorry I held you up so long. I kind of lost track of you being here. What's got for us?
Okay, a couple things. One is this, you were asking what is causing the value of the dollar to rise.
Yep. What,
the federal government is backing the U.S. dollar with oil. There are 7,000 oil wells in the Gulf of Mexico. At the last day of 2011, the newspapers announced that America sells more oil, petroleum products, than anything else that we sell. So the U.S. dollar is being backed by oil. Just like in the 1970s, 2 years after the federal government went off the gold standard, and Henry Kissinger talked the Arabs into only accepting U.S. dollars for their oil, and that's what backed the U.S. dollar. Now America backs the U.S. dollar with our own oil.
That's a very interesting point. Earl, that's very interesting, because that shows to me, and I've never thought about this, that would be the reason for Makanda and all those wells out there and what's happened in my part of the country, the Gulf of Mexico, because I'm from that part of the country. And obviously it's a shift to get that flow that was anchored by the Arabs. They had to get the Saudis' agreement to accept dollars over there, and they're shifting it over and trying to back it with their own oil internally. That would make a lot of sense to me.
Well, it also makes sense.
Oil wells out there. Sorry.
Go ahead, Earl.
There's 7,000 oil wells in the Gulf of Mexico.
Yes.
So that you have to have oil. You don't have to have much of anything else, but in modern society, you have to have oil. So that makes oil what's valuable. That's why
I agree with you. But
for the rest of the world.
The major oil companies are all interlocked, and they call them the Seven Sisters. They're so interlocked, they got a family name for them.
Yeah, well, in the 1920s and 30s, there were books written that corporations in Great Britain figured out that you had to have oil, and their they intended and are carrying out the idea of creating a monopoly of owning as much oil as they can. In fact, BP is the largest oil company in the American Gulf of Mexico.
Yes, well, if you there's one word that their whole game boils down to is monopoly. That brings me to an interesting trivia point, Al. Do you know what the first monopoly in the world was? I mean, besides what I know you're going to want to think I'm going to say, it wasn't that. There was an actual commodity that was the first commodity in the world that was monopolized. You know what it was? It
might have been salt.
This comes from Eustace Mullins, not Roger, okay? The color purple.
The color purple. All right, a dye.
Yep.
Royal purple.
Yep, that's why it's associated with royalty. They're the only ones that could afford it because they monopolized it and charged through the nose for it.
Yeah. All right, but I think Earl's point that the dollar is now increasingly again backed by petroleum, I think it's actually pretty insightful. They cut a deal where it was backed by petroleum coming out of the Saudis and OPEC, and now that the Saudis and OPEC maybe aren't producing so much, we have started producing, and again, people can take dollars overseas knowing that they can buy oil from the United States.
I'll tell you what else this explains.
There's a lot of insight in that.
It explains something else, too. It explains the push for fracking.
Well, I agree, and that's going to be a problem, though. I think that's going to contaminate groundwater before they're done. I think they'll live directly.
Drilling in the Gulf of Mexico ain't a problem?
Well, the whole thing is. I agree.
It's ruined my hometown.
Well,
one other thing I'd like to bring up is about the circulating two mediums of exchange, paper and precious metals.
Free gold.
If people don't have to wait for the television or the media to tell you to do this. You don't have to wait for the government report that says it's okay to do this. When you go and buy something, whether it's a Craigslist, a yard sale, your neighbor, your cousin, your friend, offer to buy it with gold coins or silver coins.
Yep, this is an old theme of John.
You can start it on your own. You can start it on your own in your world, and that's what makes it happen. And the government will eventually figure out, we're pretty late on this gravy train, but the American people have been doing it for decades before they figure it out.
Well, I agree that we can all contribute and make things move if we will get up off the couch and make it happen. But right now, we're out of time, folks. So I want to thank Earl for making the call and Roger for being here. And I want to thank all you folks for listening. And I will be back with Melody tomorrow. And in the meantime, may the good Lord bless you, me, Roger, Earl, and Frank, the producer.
Bye-bye.
All night, I work all day to pay the bills I have to pay. Ain't it sad? And still, there never seems to be a single penny left for me. That's too bad.